morning, Lakeview. Good to see you all here. I feel like it's been a while since I've seen you from this vantage point. It's nice to be back. Before I jump into our teaching this morning, I have a couple of quick announcements. The first one is about an LGBTQ2S+ task force that our denomination has started. Lakeview Church, if you didn't know, is affiliated with the Free Methodist Church in Canada. And the Methodist Church has long had ties to all kinds of social justice issues, like abolishing slavery and advocation of children's rights or of women's rights and child labor reform, building hospitals and pharmacies and that kind of thing. And while our denomination has been really good at social justice issues in the past, the church as a whole hasn't been super good at responding to LGBTQ2S+ issues. And so in keeping with our mission to join with God in the renewal of all things, the Free Methodist Church's leadership, national leadership team, has identified our present relationship with the LGBTQ2S+ community as one of the most pressing issues for not only us, but for Christians worldwide. And so as part of that process, we've been having this conversation as a leadership for quite a while, but as part of that process, we're beginning to invite our churches into this conversation. And on Thursday, June 16th at 7 p.m. in the atrium, we're inviting you to join in, to learn a little bit about what that discussion is about, and to learn a little bit, join the discussion, share your ideas about how we can engage and welcome people of LGBTQ2S+. And you can register on the website so that we can prepare for you accordingly, okay? Through May and June, we are continuing to encourage you to join in and take action for reconciliation. We're beginning a class tomorrow on the meaning and ways of reasons for land acknowledgements, and so you're invited to join us for that. You can find details on our website if you're interested. And another event that we'd like to highlight is a kinship bingo night that is being hosted by Sons and Daughters on June 11th. And they're looking for volunteers to help support this event, and it's a great opportunity to not only join in the work of reconciliation, but meet some new people and have a great time and maybe, you know, yell a bingo. You can register online for that too if you're interested. All right, let's jump into our last teaching on Galatians. We're in our fifth week on Rethink the Book of Galatians on Breaking Rules and Breaking Bread. And I want to just give you kind of a quick intro and also wrap up for the book of Galatians to kind of bookend this series. Galatians is a letter written to the churches in Galatia by the Apostle Paul. But in this letter, we see a side of Paul that we don't generally see in the other letters that he writes. He's terse, he's angry. He offers very little encouragement to these churches. And the reason that he's doing this is that there are people in the churches in Galatia that are demanding that Gentile Christians become Jewish in order to be part of the church community. Now, if you've been around church for a while, you might have heard that Galatians' main point, or the center of Galatians, is about not earning your salvation through works, but instead gaining it by faith, faith alone. And while that's part of Paul's argument, that's actually not the center or the heart of the book, or of Paul's indignation. The reason that Paul is so angry with the churches in Galatia is that the center of the gospel for Paul is that Jesus' work on the cross forms this radically new community into which everybody is invited, regardless of their gender, their nationality, or their socioeconomic status, regardless of any identity that the world offers them. We all belong because God is a welcoming God, and in the cross, through the work of Jesus, God has broken down every barrier to us being reconciled to God and to one another. And the sign of the cross's power is actually this loving, unified, and diverse community. Now, if you've been around for the last few weeks, you'll also know that the lightning rod issue in the book of Galatians is circumcision. The Jewish Christians want the Gentile Christians to get the deed done. And so there's this constant sort of not suitable for work, like wordplay about being cut off from community and being cut in the literal sense. And you can uncross your legs because we don't adhere to that rule in this community. You're good. And this week, we're in the last chapter of Galatians, Galatians 6. And after spending a few chapters explaining the gospel to these churches, Paul gets down to practicalities. And in particular, we're going to focus on the ways that he gives this Galatian church to deal with a brother or a sister in their community that they see wandering into sin. But I'm going to start with a story. So this is a story about my children, which most of my stories are. A few years ago, when my kids were little, and my main role in life was stay-at-home mom, I was scheduled to preach here at Lakeview one Sunday, and it was a Saturday. I had all four kids at home, and they were all a little squirrely. You guys know what that feels like, right? So I was feeling this pressure to like keep the top on my children, but also the pressure to prep for my sermon the next morning. And so I gathered all of my kids and I did like just such an amazing mom thing. I was so mature about it. I was like, I brought them together and I said, could you please not fight or scream or make any noises just for one half of an hour, just a half hour. Just do something quiet for one half hour so that I can practice my sermon. And they all looked up at me with their innocent faces and promised that they would. You know where this is going already. So I headed to my room to practice my sermon, and they headed downstairs to play. And no more than 2 minutes into my practicing, I heard my youngest screaming from the basement, and I immediately saw red. I raced down the stairs, demanded to be told what had caused them to break their promise to me, and upon hearing that my middle son had punched my youngest son, I grabbed my middle son's nose, shook it back and forth, and said, "We do not hurt each other in this house." Thank you for your gracious laughter. And I'm just going to leave that story there while we jump into this passage. Galatians 6 explores what it looks like to reconcile, to restore, to live in right relationship again in community when people mess up. And I can tell you that this story from a day in the life of Allison is not what Paul has in mind. And we'll unpack that a little through this sermon as we head into a family counseling session with Paul. Listen to these verses from Galatians 6. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks that they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions, and then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else, for each one should carry their own load. So, community is messy. Family is messy. People are messy. We sin. We do the wrong thing. It is a reality. You will sin, you will mess it up, and so will I. And when we do, it has this ripple effect because we belong to one another. And so Paul here, recognizing the messiness of community, gives the Galatians a tool for repair and renewal. If you see someone sinning, he says, restore them gently. Don't cut them off. Trying to maintain your own purity or the purity of your community, instead, enter into the situation with them. Bear their burden along with them. So there were two realities at work in the church in Galatia here. One was these Jewish believers that we've already talked about, who were trying to convince Gentile believers that they had to be circumcised in order to be saved. So there was this pressure arising from this religious group for the community to conform to the traditions of Judaism. But there was also the reality of these Gentile pagans who were coming into the church with no sense of the new ethic that was demanded by following Jesus. And so there was undoubtedly this other reality in the church of people getting it wrong, sinning, as they worked out what it meant to live in line with this new reality that Jesus was welcoming them into. As Jared spoke last week, if you were here, the laundry list of things that Paul listed in Galatians 5 were real temptations caused real confusion for these new believers, because the first century church was messy. And so we can also imagine that if the Judaizers in the crowd were concerned about circumcision and maintaining Jewish identity, that their go-to in dealing with these Gentile Christians or Gentile brothers and sisters who sinned would be to get them cut or cut them off from community. And Paul is saying here, no, actually, what matters is dealing with the sin that you see in one another with gentleness, rather than sorting one another out by nationality or adherence to some outward sign of belonging or some pretense of righteousness. Paul's strategy also would have served to democratize the nurturing and healing of community. Let me explain that. So, a Jewish follower of Jesus who was trying to convince a Gentile believer that they were supposed to be circumcised could potentially be brought back gently by a Gentile brother and sister who saw that that wasn't the right way to go about it. And a follower who was a Gentile and potentially living unethically could be brought back by a Jewish brother or sister who saw the importance of living a holy life. And this way of rebuilding community would link them together in mutuality and love. The goal was not to maintain purity or perfection in community, but to heal and restore the one who had erred, and in the process, restore and heal community. In fact, the word here for restore in Greek means to repair, to complete thoroughly, or to mend. And it is the same word used in Matthew 4 when Jesus calls his first disciples, seeing James and John sitting on the side of the lake, mending their fishing nets, same word. Jesus calls them and they get up and follow him. And this is what I learned about mending nets this week. Net mending is a skill that takes a high level of expertise as well as a good dose of patience. The net has to be rebuilt so that it is the same as the original net in order for it to fish the same way. This involves tying twine so that it does not slide and the knot does not come undone. The mender also has to be able to visualize what the net should look like and how many meshes there should be, which can be difficult when the hole is large. So the goal of mending a fishing net is that it will be restored to its original purpose. The goal is not to tear the net apart, but patiently and creatively knit it back together. To take the time necessary and to envision what a whole and mended net could look like, not simply to patch the hole. The goal of restoration is not to tear apart, but to gently bring back together, not just the parts of a person that have given rise to sin or the parts that are wounded by sin, but the tears that that sin causes in community. The goal is not to unleash like a frustrated mother on her noisy kids, but to tend to relationship. And if the goal of restoration is healing and repair, then our posture, the way that we do it, has to match our goal, right? The way of restoration has to be gentleness, not nose grabbing. So back to my mom fail. Ironically, during this incident, I had one of those wall hangings with family rules on it. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? You might have one in your house. I tried to find a picture of mine, but I couldn't, but it basically looked like this. And it has rules like we laugh often, we forgive each other, we say please and thank you, we hug. I can guarantee you that no one has on their list of family rules, punch your brother. I can also guarantee that no one has grab your kid's nose when he punches his brother, because both of these actions are actually breaking the family rules, because the purpose of a family is to have love and acceptance and live in a safe place with people who have your best interests at heart. And punching and grabbing noses work against the formation of a healthy, functional family. Now, grabbing your kid's nose might lead or might keep that kid from punching his brother again, but it undermines the larger purpose of a family. And it's the same thing when we're doing the work of restoration with one another. We might be able to stop bad behavior through punishment, through fear, or through isolation, but this will undermine the very purpose of restoration and the very heart of the gospel, to bring healing and to restore community. And what's really interesting about this passage is that Paul's focus is not on the one who has sinned. Paul is more concerned with the one who is doing the restoring. Restore them gently, he says, share burdens, and watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. So what does this mean? Does this mean that sin spreads in proximity? That if we get close to someone who is sinning, that we might catch it or get infected by it? Well, that would seem to go against the whole point of Paul's letter here, that the power of Christ's death on the cross defeated the power of sin, and that means that we can be reconciled, we can rub shoulders with one another. And it seems to go against the whole trajectory of Jesus' life. He spent his whole time with tax collectors and sinners, right? And claimed it is not the healthy that need a doctor, but the sick. So I don't think this is what Paul means. I think instead what Paul is warning against here is the sometimes irresistible pull of self-righteousness when we see somebody else mess things up, and the temptation to use somebody else's wrongdoing to prop up our own sense of virtue or goodness. So if you've ever seen someone else sin and you said to yourself, I would never do that, then you know what Paul is talking about here. If you've ever seen somebody else's kid make a decision that you don't agree with and you thought, my kids would never do that, then you know what Paul is talking about here. If you ever have judged someone in your heart for their habits or their relationships or their actions, then you know what Paul is talking about here. It's self-righteousness that makes us feel a false sense of holiness. And I thought a lot this week about this Eugene Peterson quote that I couldn't find, but he says that we judge people for sins that we haven't had the opportunity to commit, or we're simply too tired to commit, and then we think it's because we're better than them. Or have you ever actually or proverbially grabbed your kid's nose out of anger or frustration when someone does something wrong? If you have, then you know what Paul is talking about here. Because as we can see clearly from this little vignette from my life, the irony of acting out of frustration and anger without examining our own hearts and lives is that we tend to bring our own judgment back on our own head, realizing we are exactly the thing that we are judging somebody else for. A mom who tells her kid that we don't need or that we don't hurt each other while she's hurting her child. We do this kind of thing all the time, don't we? Trying to point out the speck in someone else's eye, we ignore the plank in our own. And so Paul says this: if anyone thinks they are something that they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. And if you want to find out if you think that you are something that you are not, look at the way that you deal with someone who has messed it all up. There is no sure test of the spiritual person than his treatment of another sin. As the church, maybe as individuals, how often is it our goal in confronting people, just a knee-jerk reaction to feel better or to unleash our frustration? How often are we motivated by the desire to make sure that we appear to be doing the right thing, appear to be a community that follows the rules or has the correct outward signs of what it means to belong or be righteous? How often are we motivated by our own self-righteousness, our own sense of superiority? Been there. How often do we judge ourselves safe from the sins of another and then meet those who need restoration and hope, not on the basis of compassion or gentleness or shared humanity, but on the basis of our own feelings of self-satisfaction and superiority? Even if a harsh approach did work to pull someone out of sin, it doesn't serve the purpose of building the family, the purpose of God in the world, the work of God to renew and restore all things to God's self in Christ and to restore us to relationship with one another, to knit together this new family based on mutual allegiance to Jesus. And our ways and means have to match our purpose. When we approach one another with the truth in gentleness and compassion, understanding our own proclivities and propensities for failure and sin, Paul says we fulfill the law of Christ, not the law of Moses that requires punishment for sin, but the law of Christ, where people are restored in relationship through grace and through love, restored to relationship with God, with each other, and with themselves. Paul then goes on in this passage to talk about what we sow is what we reap in God's world, which serves to just kind of double down on what he's already spoken about, that there's no need to punish or condemn other people because what we sow is what we reap. God's looking after that. They are responsible for their own stuff in the end, but also this encouragement to take responsibility for our own selves, making sure that what we are sowing right now is what we want to reap, even when it comes to the ways that we restore and call out one another. Now I want to skip to the end of chapter 6, where Paul basically sums up the whole of what he's been saying in the book of Galatians. So let's read from Galatians 6, 14 to 17. Those of you who want to impress people by means of the flesh are trying to compel you to be circumcised. And the only reason they do this is to avoid being persecuted for the cross of Christ. Not even those who are circumcised keep the law, yet they want you to be circumcised that they may boast about your circumcision in the flesh. May I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. Neither circumcision nor uncircumcision means anything. What counts is the new creation. And from now on, let no one cause me trouble, for I bear on my body the marks of Jesus. So remember how the lightning rod issue for the Judaizers was this circumcision issue, right? Well, here Paul comes back and he's just like, one more swipe at these people. He calls them out on their own hypocrisy. But then he says these words, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision means anything. Really? You've spent five chapters talking about circumcision. He says, what counts is the new creation, the world set right through the cross. Having spent the whole book referring back to this issue of circumcision, using it for this talking point to call the Galatians back to the purpose of the gospel, Paul says, you know what? Doesn't matter. Be circumcised, don't be circumcised, because if you really get what Jesus did in the cross, if you really get the new creation, it does not matter. And then he says that he bears in his body the marks of Jesus. So the word for marks here is stigma, from which we get the later word stigmata. So you might know that in Christian mysticism, stigmata are the miraculous appearance of wounds or markings that correspond to the wounds and markings of Christ when he was crucified. So wounds could appear on hands or feet, on the head from the crown of thorns, side from a sword, sometimes the back where Jesus was whipped. And these miraculous occurrences are meant to reveal the suffering love of Christ on the cross for the sake of the world, to reveal the heart of God, the God who suffers for the sake of the world. Paul is saying here that circumcision or uncircumcision, these kinds of marks, they hold no power. They cannot change people's lives or bring renewal or draw people into this new creation. It is the suffering love of Jesus that does that. And it is bearing that same truth, those marks in our own lives that actually holds power. Now, Paul was circumcised, so he had that mark. But he also had some actual physical wounds that revealed his loyalty to Christ. He had marks from lashes given. He maybe had marks left from eating too little or being mistreated or imprisoned. He had literal marks on his body. And what mattered to him was not the circumcision, but the marks that he bore for love of Jesus, for the love of others. Now, maybe your body holds literal marks of self-sacrificial love, but even if your body doesn't, literally, our lives are meant to be the location where we reveal the reality that in Christ, new creation comes as we lay down our lives for one another, as we live compassionately with those who have done wrong, as we live with a humble sense of self. Our lives are meant to bear the marks of Christ, the stigmata of sacrificial love. But I often think that we hold on to marks like circumcision that have no power. It might be our age, our nationality, our gender, what we have, what we own, the amount of money we have. We might hold on to marks like power and position. Or we might even feel like we don't have power because we aren't the right nationality or gender, or because we don't have money or positions of power. But neither circumcision nor uncircumcision matters. These things do not hold real power in the new creation. What holds power is love born self-sacrificially. This is the power that taps into new creation and brings redemption. It is the cruciform love of Christ. You can have status and money and be successful and go to the right schools, do all the right things, or you can have none of those things. What matters is cruciform love. What matters is the new creation revealed in the way that we love one another. Now, one of the ways that I think we hold on to marks is the way that we hold on to positions of power. We believe that we have to hold these things with a spirit of force or domination to show complete competence, to never show weakness or vulnerability, when in reality, it is when we show compassion and show frailty and show vulnerability that new things are possible, that relationships shift and love begins to flow. You see, if Christ was completely vulnerable on the cross and that brought a whole new creation into existence, then this must be the new framework for the new creation and for those of us who follow Christ. So the day that I grabbed my son's nose, I realized pretty quickly the irony and wrongness of my actions, and it wasn't long before I was apologizing and asking for forgiveness from Ketus, which he gave me. And then we were able to talk about my frustrations about not getting work done and his frustrations with his brother, which were many. You know, all the things that we should have done instead of me grabbing his nose. Now my son... Try again. Oh, there I am. So Ketus is a great kid, and he also has a great sense of humor. And so the next time I got angry with my kids, he covered his nose with his hand, and we all started laughing. And for a while there, that was a little thing we did when I got angry, a surefire way to diffuse my anger and get us all laughing was for them to cover their noses. Now, I could have doubled down on the way I was parenting my kids that day. I could have told Ketus he deserved a little nose pinch. I could have pretended that I hadn't done anything wrong, but that isn't what family is about, right? And it was my vulnerability, my admission of wrongness that actually brought healing. It was a very, very, very small way that I bore Christ in my body instead of holding on to my power. And so here is your last invitation for this morning. Where do you hold power? Where do you hold responsibility? And how are you holding it? Are you able to let it go, to admit your vulnerabilities and to show in your weakness or to show your weakness? Are you willing to bear in your body not the marks of success and power, but the marks of Christ, the stigmata of self-sacrificial love? And I'll remind you as the band comes that after all of this, what matters is not circumcision or uncircumcision, but the new creation brought into being through self-sacrificial love, through the cross.